Everyone, welcome back to Sports in the Mitten. My name is Thomas Bendit here with Adam Biggers. It is Wednesday, September 6th, moving into week two of the college football season, a very, very hectic week one. Adam, how's it going? Haven't got to talk since Michigan State both got wins over the weekend.
Yeah, it was last week, you know, we wanted to do one for you guys out there watching and listening on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio, watching the live stream on YouTube. Schedule and travel didn't permit. The hour time difference kind of got us a little bit too, but yeah, it was a huge weekend. Huge weekend. I think bigger for Michigan, of course, but I mean at the same time, I think it was a big weekend for Michigan State too to start the season off with a victory. Considering all the circumstances last year, and 3-9, and the four players dismissed for sexual assault, and you know other guys getting in trouble, but in terms of just national implications, in terms of just the bigger game overall, the Michigan versus Florida, that was a huge win for Jim Harbaugh's program, and I didn't really have any doubt, Thomas, going in that the Wolverines were going to win. I thought it would be 27-14. The defense was absolutely dominant. We'll go over Michigan versus Florida a little bit with you guys, some final thoughts, and if we get any questions here in the live stream chat room, we'll address those as well. We're going to get into Cincinnati preview a little bit, and then we are also going to, I will, and then I guess maybe Thomas will listen a little bit, talk Michigan State and Western Michigan. So
yeah,
a lot to get into tonight with you guys, and again, it's been a little while for Thomas and I, but we're going to make these. The preview shows will be regular Wednesday evenings, guys. So tune in anywhere between 8 and 9 o'clock, depending on Thomas and I's schedule. But we want to try to at least give you guys a rough idea. So the two-man preview shows every week will be Wednesday evening. So I guess, Thomas, go ahead. If you want to start off the discussion, I mean, what did you think of Michigan versus Florida?
Yeah. I mean, usually we try to do one on Sunday night. Obviously, as you mentioned, the travel was kind of an issue this week, so we didn't get to do our usual one. But yeah, I mean, you know, first off, big win for the Wolverines. I was kind of like you. I think we talked on this podcast, and my thing I said is I don't know how Florida was going to score. That was my thought coming in. I just thought, with so many questions at the quarterback position, with so many offensive questions versus what most considered to be the strength of the team for Michigan, the defense, I was just wondering how Florida was going to get into the end zone. Obviously, that proved to be true. You know, Florida ended up with 17 points, but no offensive touchdowns. Both of those came off of pick sixes. So I thought it was – nonetheless, though, I thought first, you know, it's a huge win. I mean, anytime you get a Power 5 win out of conference against a program that has won – I want to say they've won 9 or 10 games for the last 3-4 years in a row. I could be mistaken on that, but a pretty
27 season openers too. That was a season long streak. So
yeah,
that was...
yeah, definitely a notable streak there. But yeah, my only point there is just, you know, a pretty consistent winner. You know, obviously they're not beating down Bama or anything like that, but I mean a solid, consistent program that's won national championships in the last 15 years or so. More recent than that, last decade probably. I think that's a big thing. And the other thing I was really wondering about is, as I said, and as you voiced a couple of minutes ago, you know, we both felt pretty confident the Wolverines were going to come out with a W, but was that going to be by 1, 2 points? Was it going to be by 10? You know, Vegas, I think it started at 2 or 3 and then eventually it moved up to 5 or 6 by kickoff. But Vegas thought it was going to be a pretty competitive game. It was not. It was not at all. That was a complete butt kicking for the Wolverines. Frankly, I think Florida was lucky to be as close as they were. And I know people get very bothered when you say the word lucky around sports, but I'm sorry. How dominated do you have to be to get 2 pick sixes in a game and still lose by double digits? I mean, like, to me, that just speaks to how much they were dominated on a play-by-play basis. But big win for the Wolverines. I will say, you know, for the fans already purchasing tickets to the playoff or something, I would cool off a little bit. You know, I don't want to be the downer, But, you know, Notre Dame and Texas played last year, the opening weekend. Everybody thought those teams looked like the best teams ever, and neither of them were good at all. I don't think either of them even made a bowl game. So, you know, let's hold off. Nice start for the Wolverines. I think it's a good sign of things to come. But, you know, let's wait and see a couple more weeks first.
Yeah, if there's one thing that I could take away from the game, and Thomas, you know me pretty well, I don't really go off, and I mentioned this during the solo podcast the other day, I don't really go off on, you know, buying into too much hype. You know, it's really, especially now, it's really easy to get caught up with hype and hype. But when it comes to Michigan's defense, I don't think it's hype. I think it's substance. I don't see any reason why we're not going to see the same type of defense, if not faster. They looked really fast. If not faster, more physical than what we've seen during the past 2 years, where Michigan's had the number one, number two total ranked defense. Even really the past 3 years. I mean, Michigan's defense, Michigan's defensive line specifically. I know that there were questions about the secondary, and we saw that. Florida got, I think it was 99 of its 181 yards on four passing plays. And immediately, you know, went and picked on LeVert Hill, Felipe Franks, his first pass of the game. And really that was about one of maybe two good-looking passes he got off the whole day. Yeah, there's so many angles to slice this with, but my bottom line is Michigan's defense is elite. It will be elite. I don't think there's any questions. If there's something that if you want to go all in on something from this game, because I know Michigan fans are itching to go all in on you know, on these guys right now across the board. Like Thomas said, you know, kind of caution yourself a little bit, but if you want to go all in on something, it's defense. And what have we learned, you know, from our lifetimes watching college football? I mean, it's just proven over and over again. You can have a so-so offense. We don't know what Michigan's offense is going to be. But if you have a dominant defense, and this goes for almost just about any sport, really, if you have dominant defense, you're going to have a chance to win more times than not. And I think you hit it on the nose. Two, and not just two pick sixes, two consecutive pick sixes.
Yeah.
Second quarter, what looked like it was going to be a tight game, right?
Oh, we should mention as well, they got a blocked punt as well.
Yeah, and a blocked punt. But, I mean, Michigan forced three fumbles. Josh Metellus was huge on a forced fumble to Lawrence Marshall. That set up a field goal. I'm trying to think who else. Who knocked it loose for Noah Furbush's touchdown?
Winovich.
Yeah, Chase Winovich. And Chase Winovich was all over the place. Big hits. I mean, if you want to go all in about something, you know, from one game, go ahead and go all in on this defense. To me, there's no doubt about it. And to see Lawrence Marshall and Carlo Kemp get out there and show a little bit of Michigan's depth, not huge drop off. The secondary, again, I thought that LeVert Hill, I mean, he looked young at times. David Young looked young at times. I thought Brandon Watson played well, but they rebounded. I don't think there's going to be much of an issue. I still do think that the secondary is still the weakness, if we're going to, you know, talk in terms of weaknesses. But as a whole, Michigan's defense right now, I'll say it right now, I don't think there's any – they're going to be a top 10. I said top 10, 15 the other day, we're talking to a friend. 10 defense. I don't think there's any question about that.
I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, the defense was very, very impressive. Again, you know, I don't want to be a downer. I don't want to keep saying this 50 times, so I'll just throw it out there again. I am just going to keep a little bit of caution, you know, even if it's 5%, you know, whatever, just because, you know, college football is such a weird sport. You know, every game teams go up and down so much. But I would definitely say the defense was very impressive. Florida, I mean, Florida's best drive was their opening drive, which was very reliant on one big pass play. I never thought Florida really stood a chance, you know, moving past in the second half, just because if you can't move the ball, I mean, you don't have a shot. And Michigan's defense just dominant from the front end. The linebackers were excellent. You know, Devin Bush really stood out. I think, you know, again, early, but you have to be thinking all Big Ten, maybe even, you know, third team All-American, something like that. I mean, it was very, very impressive. I definitely think Michigan's defense will be up there with the best of them moving forward. And one other thing I didn't get to mention, but Quinn Nordin, excellent day. You know, very impressive. I was shocked when they brought him out there to attempt that first 50-yarder, but obviously, you know, he nailed it and moved on. But, you know, that's something to watch going forward because, I mean, if you have a kicker that can make those kind of kicks, it really changes your offensive strategy when you get on the opponent's side of the field.
And the confidence, too. I mean, you know, Quinn redshirting, but, I mean, this is his first year of, you know, he's going to see a lot of action. It's got to be a good feeling as a player to get that vote of confidence from your coach. I mean, that was a 55-yarder. And from where I was where I was sitting, and I'll say this, the press view there is not that great at AT&T Stadium. The food is excellent. The food is just wonderful. Press view, not so much. From where I was sitting, I tweeted, it looked like it would have been gone. It would have been good from another yard or two. But I saw the in-game replay. That thing barely made it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a 55-yarder. And yeah, he missed a couple easier chip shots 30-some yards later in the game. The range is there for Quinn Nordin. So yeah, I agree. This is gonna, if anything, expand your offensive capabilities a little. Well, not offensive, but your point scoring ability a little bit because you know, get Quinn somewhere if a drive stalls out. You know, 29 and 35, 36 yard line, you still know that you're in pretty decent range for your kicker. And I think that's important to mention. And I mean, when we're talking about young guys too, I mean, Ambry Thomas had a forced fumble too. Or if I recall, I think maybe Ambry, I'm trying to remember the play. Ambry Thomas was out there. Mm-hmm. He played well. Kalik Hudson, sophomore, he played very well. I thought Tariq Black, I mean, minus the little bobble, his first throw over there. I thought Tariq Black had a decent game, too. He had two catches for 83 yards. Of course, one of those was a 46-yard touchdown. He was targeted four times. Try to think of some other. I have the stat page up right now. Something that I haven't mentioned before. And, again, guys, I have videos on my YouTube channel. Go ahead and just look it up, Adam Biggers. I talked to Karan Higdon last night. I think another thing that we could take away from this, maybe they're not going to run the ball 49 times per game, but Michigan certainly has, I think, a running attack that's capable. Maybe I'm getting a little ahead of myself. It looks like that it may be able to wear down opponents. If you can run the ball 49 times for 215 yards, I mean, that's grinding. That's grinding football.
You know, I was going to say, and again, you know, as you said at the top of the show, there's so much to take away here. You know, we've been prognosticating about this game for months and months, and now we have everything to soak in for 6 days or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, I would say I think the total yardage is slightly misleading in this game just because, again, Florida's offense was totally shut down. So, I mean – Michigan probably, you know, as you mentioned, they're probably not going to have as many run plays, generally speak. Well, maybe they will against a Cincinnati or something like that. But, you know, against the top-end competition, they're probably not going to have that many run plays. But to put up 200 yards against a Florida defense that was top 10 last year, I think that's really impressive considering what this team looked like last year against good defenses. And as well, I also wanted to add, you know, one thing, if you're a Michigan fan, I think you have to be excited about is, you know, outside of just the win in general and, you know, being ranked in the top 10 is this team is still not even close to hitting its potential.
Not at all.
Last year's team, you know, they came out and just smoked Hawaii and it was like, okay, this is probably the team for the rest of the year. You know, maybe a spot improves here or there, but realistically, that's about the team versus this year where, you know, they beat Florida pretty convincingly. And
last year against Hawaii, you're like, okay, we've seen top end explosiveness. This is probably, you know, this is going to be the high end of Michigan football. We saw it on day one. I can agree with that in some ways. And yes, Florida, it's the opposite. We saw a very good defense, but at the same time, nowhere near. Like, we did. And again, just offensively speaking, I mean, we didn't see a ton in the pass game, and I'm sure part of that had to do with the pick sixes. And
yeah,
Harbaugh, I have a column coming out tomorrow on FanRag Sports. So read that and follow us on Twitter at FanRag_U, FanRagSports.com. Just more why I believe there was never a race, more about the confidence, more about Wilton Spate's relationship with, you know, with a particular player that's important, that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, you know, we saw an offense that was very much, I mean, 75 offensive plays and 49 of them were run plays. I mean, I don't know if we're necessarily going to see that all the time. And I mean, Wilton was 11 for 25. Again, not his best performance. We can talk about Spate at another time. But just offensively, defensively, I don't think we saw the looks, but we saw the speed, we saw the hitting. That the defense is going to be that for the rest of the year. Offensively, you know, there's still a lot of questions. We don't know what this passing game is going to be like. And I mean, I like the fact that he's, you know, they start out the second half, they go boom, boom, real quick to Sean McKeon. And I want to mention see, they have me saying McKeon now because I watched the replay again. Sean McKeon. It's McKeon. How impressive was Sean McKeon, I thought, as a true freshman out there, played a complete game as a tight end. His blocking was superb, his catching. I was really impressed with Sean McKeon. I think that, you know, a lot of people are focusing on Tariq and DPJ, Kakoa, you know, the wide receivers, but tight ends are going to be used, and they weren't used a lot against Florida. And again, that's what I'm saying. We haven't even begun to scrape the surface with this passing game yet. And I'm not sure if we're going to see a ton of it against Cincinnati and Air Force either. But my thoughts on the potential of the tight end position are through the roof right now, even with the limited sample size I saw from Sean McKeon. I thought this – I'm impressed with Sean McKeon. I'm buying in on Sean McKeon.
I agree. You know, I thought they both made some real nice plays. And certainly Eubanks with that circus catch late in the game, you know, really you know, coming into the season, I think everybody thought Bunting and Wheatley were going to be the guys. And obviously Wheatley got onto the field, but, you know, McKeon and
Zach Gentry.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's just so much depth and so many players making plays. I was really impressed. And I think one thing, you know, as you're talking about with the offense, you know, we're talking about, okay, you know, the run game's improving, you know, they're starting to show strides because, you know, like I said, I find the total rushing yards a little misleading personally. But the thing is there is no doubt that that rushing performance was better than any rushing performance Michigan had against a good defense last year. I think to me that's fair to say because, you know, again, racking up however many million yards against Rutgers is nice and all, but they struggled to run the ball against Iowa. They struggled against Ohio State. They struggled against Wisconsin and Florida State to rush the ball. And they did not really struggle to rush the ball against Florida on Saturday. So I think that was a big step forward. But the thing is you think about that and, you know, they're starting Kugler, his first start, Onwenu, his first start, Ulizio, his first start. And, I mean, you just think of how, you know, these guys are only going to get better over the course of the season. And, you know, maybe they only, you know, move up one on a 10 scale. You know, maybe they only improve a little bit. But I think that this team can improve a lot by the end of the year. And, you know, as you talked about with the schedule coming up here, there aren't a lot of major tests, at least on paper, until that Penn State game. So if Michigan can sort of dial some stuff up here, you know, maybe work on that passing game, the consistency, I think this can be a very dangerous team going forward.
And guys, we'll get into the Cincinnati preview. I want to make a couple notes, though, with the rush game. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost 230-plus yard runs. Chris Evans had a 29-yarder. Ty Isaac had a 36-yarder. Ty Isaac tied a career high with 114 yards. I think that's a huge confidence builder for Ty because, as we've both talked about, I mean, what can peak Ty Isaac be to this Michigan running game? And I likened it with boxing. Chris Evans is the guy. He's going to dance you around the ring a little bit. He's going to get you tired. Perron Higdon. You could throw some little jabs, you know, a little jab. Ty Isaac is the body blow knockout. And I think the Ty proved that. And where this ties into the running games, because I thought that they ran a lot of the stuff behind the left side of the line, whether it had to do with field position or not, but obviously the left side is the strongest. I know it was Nolan's first start. I'm not going to hammer the guy too much, but I was not overly impressed by him. But at the same time, you have to wonder what exactly has he shown? Because I mean, I was so hell bent on it was going to be Juwan Bushel-Beatty or John Runyon at that spot. Mm-hmm. That, you know, the more I think about Nolan Eulusio is, wow, this guy must have just been really good in camp. Mm-hmm. And of course, I mean, to win the starting job. But I mean, there are really tremendous upsides with John Runyon and Juwan Bushel-Beatty, and John Runyon being on paper, you know, their most athletic lineman. So I'm anxious to see what Nolan's going to be, because I don't even know if maybe Florida was just a bad game for him. And mm-hmm. we don't have anything to reference, right?
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if it was just a bad game for him, because for him to go in there, you know, season opener, Florida, SEC opponent, Jerry's World, yada, yada, yada. We've talked about it a million times. They had to have seen something in him. So really my only question in terms of run game or quarterback, we can do a whole show on it. I don't even want to talk about quarterback right now.
Really? That's a hot topic?
Wait for the column tomorrow and you'll see why. Like I feel like this case is closed. It's done with. Like, come on, just stop it. But yeah, my concern a little bit with the right side of the line. Mike Conway, you played well, I know that, but it takes two. Someone mentioned that to me on Twitter. It takes two. So other than that, I think it's time to put the Florida game to rest. It happened. It was a great win for Michigan. Move on to the next week. And this next week, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on this, guys, because Michigan's favored by 99 points. I mean,
one last thought on the Florida game before we move on to Cincinnati. I just want to point out about how hysterical it is about how many national pundits, you know, claim Michigan was going to get its butt kicked last weekend, and suddenly Florida is now the worst team of all time, and you know they never could play against anybody, and you know Michigan should have blew them out. It's a little funny to me about how, you know, talking out of both sides of your mouth about this last Saturday game.
There is, and we see a lot, and we see a lot of it, and I think that in order, and this is a whole other topic too, in order to draw viewers or get clicks and stuff, it's like people just have to say stuff that they don't believe. I can't say anything that I don't believe. I just can't do it. Mm-hmm. Not even for, even as a hypothetical. I mean, I almost feel sometimes I'm like, okay, I don't want to stretch in that territory, but yes, I'm 100% buying in on Michigan's defense after one game. Mm-hmm. I could say that. But this other, you know, yeah, all this hot take era and all this other stuff, it's really laughable. Guys, Cincinnati, once upon a time, Cincinnati was a pretty good football program. And just looking at records, and if you remember 2008 to 2012, they either won or shared the Big East title. And that was under Brian Kelly and Butch Jones. There was only one year, that's 2010, 4-8. They finished seventh. But we're looking at a team just from 2008, 11-3, 12-1, 4-8, 10-3, 10-3, 9-4, 9-4, 7-6, 4-8. With the past 4 years being under Tommy Tuberville. Now, Luke Fickell, everybody remembers Luke. He was the intern head coach at Ohio State. Your mission, what was the score of that game? Wasn't it a?
Michigan won by like six, I think. I remember Ohio State had the ball. Braxton Miller's first year, you know, they're driving down. He gets picked off halfway.
Was that a 12 to 10? Because I know that Michigan State game that, in 2012, that was a 12 to 10 game.
Maybe no, it was it. Higher scoring. It was higher scoring. I want to say it was something like Michigan had like 31 to 24 or something. Okay,
right. Anyway, it's Luke Fickell's first year. They had a little quarterback thing going on. They find out who their quarterback. And I've watched. I didn't watch the game. I watched some highlights. He doesn't look bad. And if you hate him more. And I'm reading from the Associated Press. Hayden Moore was told by first-year Cincinnati head coach Luke Fickell that he won the quarterback job over Ross Trail last week. So, and against Austin Peay, and again, this is why we're not going to spend a lot of time previewing this game, guys, because Cincinnati had trouble with these guys, okay? Cincinnati led 20-14 with 11:41 to play in the fourth quarter. So they were still struggling with these guys. I mean, this, I don't want to be lazy here and skip over and, you know, doing the homework and stuff. But guys, it's a waste of time. Like I said, that Michigan's favored by, what is it? It's not 99 points. It's like a third of that, though.
It's like 33,
34.
Like,
I mean, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Players to watch for Cincinnati. Hayden Moore, watch to see if their Ross Trail ends up in there, because Michigan's already put out one quarterback this year. Last year, what, they put out about 8 or 9? So I imagine that we'll see Ross Trail Saturday for the Bearcats. Probably not under good circumstances, because Hayden Moore's probably getting ragdolled. And, I mean, if you look at this defense line with Chase Winovich, Chase Winovich, we've talked about this. I've been asked, do I think if he's underrated? I mean, it's just maybe not underrated, but when you're playing with Rashawn Gary and mm-hmm. Maurice Hurst, maybe it's a little hard to get noticed. Well, I think people are noticing Chase now, and especially against, you know, what he did against Florida. So, anyway, Hayden Moore, Cincinnati Bearcat quarterback. He's 17-28 for 151 yards and 3 touchdowns during that 26-14 win over Austin Peay. And their leading rusher was Mike Boone. He had 19 carries for 100 yards and a touchdown. He won't touch that against the Wolverines defense. I'll just say that right now. And Thomas Geddes, their leading receiver, 4 catches for 48 yards and a touchdown. So, I mean, I'm not trying to, like I said, well, I guess, good luck, Cincinnati. Those are my thoughts. Good luck.
Yeah, I mean
you're really gonna need some luck to happen. This game's gonna be over by halftime. I imagine that we'll see John O'Korn getting some decent reps. John looked good against Florida. I mean, they put him in. The plan was not to give him reps. I'll reference the Florida game. That report on TV was not true. The plan was never to give him, you know, it wasn't – the plan was to win the game with Wilton Spate. That was what the plan was. When they had to take Wilton out after those pick six, John did a great job of going in and just not messing up. That was probably the message. Don't screw up. And he didn't. He had a nice 37-yard pass. Well, that one was to Tariq as well. I think Tariq, you know, had a couple nice grabs. So, anyway, the way I see this game going, over by halftime, we'll see John O'Korn probably somewhere midway through the third quarter. I think the Wilton Spate, he's got the cobwebs shaken off of him. That Florida game put the two pick sixes behind. If you look at, I mean, yeah, he overthrew touchdown. He overthrew Kakoa a lot. I mean, and one to Grant Perry, that was a pick six. The accuracy was not there, but the range was there, if that makes sense. He can get it downfield. I don't think there's a problem there. I know that especially against Florida, I mean, just stat-wise, he was 40%. So the accuracy was not there. But he has a career 61.6, or at least his first year as a starter, 61.6% percentage, completion percentage. So Wilton does have some accuracy. We just didn't see it against the Gators. So this has to be a game for him where it's get real confident, spread the ball. I imagine we'll probably see him going to Kakoa a lot, get some reps in with DPJ. You know, we didn't see much of Donovan at the receiver position. Get some more with Tariq and call it a day. I mean, it's a tune-up game for sure. It's pad some stats, get some confidence, and like I said, this thing will be over by halftime. I would be surprised if Cincinnati scores an offensive touchdown. I think it's a game where they probably hold them to 6 or 9 points, and that's field goals, and maybe these come late. I can honestly – if do you remember that Northwestern game a couple years back? They got up like 38-0 at halftime.
Yeah.
I mean, I see – and that BYU game that was over by halftime, I see the defense just shutting them down. Hawaii was over. You know, that Hawaii game was over before it started, honestly. So, yeah, good luck, Cincinnati. I don't really see anything to where we can have any type of construction or conversation about – what could happen with us? No constructive conversation. It'd all just be massive reaches. Cincinnati just doesn't have the firepower to hang with Michigan. And then that's the bottom line. That really is.
I totally agree. A few general comments for me. You know, as I mentioned on the last one, I'm a big fan of Bill Conley's advanced numbers. He sort of does Ken Pom for college football. they're not always perfect, but whatever. They give you a little bit of a mindset on certain teams. He has Cincinnati at 73 overall. A lot of these rankings for him right now are still based off the preseason. They're barely ahead of Boston College. They're under Virginia. They're under Maryland, Central Florida. So last year's Central Florida team, think of a team weaker than that. And that is what Michigan will be getting on Saturday. Their offense stinks. Their defense isn't terrible. So Michigan, you know, their offensive starters, and particularly Spate, maybe they can get a little bit of work. But, yeah, I would expect this one to be over. And I think, you know, typically, you know, when a team like Michigan, you know, a top 10 team, has a game like that, you know, we tend to ask the question, well, you know, how do they lose? Because we know how they win. They just come out there and do their, you know, typical job. How do they lose? Well, I think typically the answer would be, you know, they're not focused. They're looking ahead. You know, maybe they throw some picks, stuff like that. I think one thing to keep in mind for this game is, number one, Spate is going to be highly motivated based on last week. You know, obviously, you know, not to pick on Spate, but his two throws really kept Florida in that game for a while. And then the second thing is I don't think Michigan's going to lose their focus in this game simply due to the fact that how many guys are making their first start in the Big House this weekend for Michigan?
Well, exactly. And they're coming off that Florida win. That was big. Now they know, okay, you go to Dallas or you go to Arlington, you beat Florida. That is a huge step. It's rather than them getting really good at the end of the year and then people go, but remember that week one loss against Florida and Arlington. Now that's not even in the discussion. You can't even reference that. So now we're looking at a team that has the potential to be pretty good, and it can, and it's going to say, look, and we have that win against Florida. Mm-hmm. And I don't care what anybody says, suspensions or not, it was two primary players, Callaway and Jordan Scarlett. This game still would have gone pretty much the same way. This defense carried it. Maybe Florida, I said, so, you know, maybe Florida gets an offensive touchdown or something, but this is still a game massively controlled by Michigan's defense. Saturday will be the same. And I mean, just to throw a score out there, I wouldn't be surprised if this is, you know, a 48-9, you know, something like that. 56-6. I mean, it's good. They'll cover for sure. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that they'll cover.
And if
that's the defense scoring all the touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, I would have picked them to cover at the lower number. You know, now that it's working its way up towards 40, I don't know if I would pick it as much now. But
I guess if it gets to 40, I'll be reasonable and cap it at 34.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll be reasonable, cap it at 34.
Yeah, right now I would lean towards the cover. And just like we were saying, you know, when – for me, it's a guy like, you know, Tariq Black's going to be super motivated. You know, the D linemen are going to be motivated. This is a game for them, you know, to show out at Michigan Stadium in front of the home fans for the first time, you know, as players, you know, for the Wolverines. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of looking ahead this week. You know, maybe next week or beyond you can start – talking about that kind of stuff, but I don't think any of that factors in this week. I think it's an easy win for the Wolverines.
I do too. And you guys, you know, during the solo ones, I get a lot of questions. If you guys are watching on Twitter, shoot us a question. Let us know your score prediction at Adam Biggers 81, at Mitten Sports MI is the podcast, and at T Bendit, BEINDIT is Thomas. And real quick, I want to mention with us, you know, we have a deal with Mr. Spots, mostly because I like food and I want free food. But I want to give you guys some free food too. So send us your score predictions. The closest score prediction is going to get a free Mr. Spots steak sandwich. So tweet it at us.
Nice.
At AdamBiggers81, at Mitten Sports MI. If there are, you know, the same prediction, we'll do a tiebreaker or something like that. But it's going to be really easy for you guys to get free Mr. Spots this season. Just send us score predictions and answer trivia questions. We're going to start it this week and see how it goes. So, again, I want to thank Tim and Keith over there at Mr. Spots, 808 State Street in Ann Arbor, for giving us the chance to do that. Let's Let's end the evening by talking about Michigan State and Western Michigan. Thomas, your favorite topics, I know.
I'm excited for this one, to be honest. I think it'll be a fun
for the
game.
Viewers and the listeners out there. I know that you guys are just chomping at the bit because you want to hear this Michigan State talk, but I think it's a big game for Michigan State, and to say that Western Michigan is a big game for Michigan State, given, you know, the past 6-7 years under Mark D'Antonio, it is kind of funny to me. But again, if you look at what happened last year, the 3-9, this is a first-year starter at quarterback, Brian Lewerke. I believe Brian Lewerke has the goods. I like Brian Lewerke a lot. I think he is going to be a fine quarterback in Michigan State. Starting this weekend, though, he's got a test. And, I mean, he played a little bit against Michigan. He looked good against Michigan before Jabril broke his leg. 6-for-10 for 100 yards and a touchdown. I mean, but Brian Lewerke looked fine to me. He came in, he broke off a nice run against Wisconsin, 2-for-4. You know, nothing flashy, but he's played good teams. He's got at least some type of experience. And, you know, he's coming off a season opening win. He needed that. I think that this game is huge. And Thomas, this Western Michigan hung with USC. It was like before they lost like 49-31. Darius Phillips and Samuel Buell, they're two star defensive backs. Western Michigan led the MAC last year with 15 interceptions. They took four pick sixes.
Wow.
Four. This is Sam Darnold of USC, a Heisman potential, you know, Heisman caliber quarterback. Guess how many touchdowns he threw against those guys?
Not sure, to be honest.
Zero. 2-for-33 for 289 yards. And yeah.
Wow.
If an offense scores 49 points and a guy like Darnold, he's going to get his. But that's in the grand scheme of things, I think that's kind of a modest total. It's respectable. You know, it's almost 300 yards, but he didn't throw a touchdown. It was the first time in 10 games. And USC had won 10 of those 10 previous games. Darnold had thrown a touchdown in all of them. I think these guys are really going to test Brian Lewerke. I do see Michigan State finding a way to win this game, but I don't think it's going to be, how it's been in years past. Like, every week for Michigan State is you can't overlook it now. We're not talking about, you know, a 2010 Michigan State team or 2011 or 2013. We're not talking about a Rose Bowl team to where you could start looking, okay, well, these are the games they have to win. They're going to take care of business the rest. It's not that type of season for Michigan State. Every single weekend is going to be a big game. And Mark D'Antonio said on the conference call, every week, every football game that Brian Lewerke plays is a big step towards his transition and becoming the leader and, you know, starting quarterback at Michigan State. And that's almost verbatim of what he said. So, it's a big game for Michigan State. LJ's got to correct those fumble problems. But when you look at what the Spartans have at wide receiver, Felton Davis doesn't get talked about a lot. And Felton Davis hasn't played a lot. But go back and watch those highlights and watch that one-handed grab that he made. I have to believe as a quarterback, I mean, Cam Chambers had a nice catch. I have to believe as a quarterback, you know you have some weapons there. Michigan State has some good wide receivers. It's just going to be all a matter of time. How long is it going to take Lewerke to get going with those guys? And I think that this weekend it will be a good indicator, especially against one of, you know, the best secondary. I won't say one of the best secondaries in the country, but if you lead your league, they were a championship team last year. This is a championship-level secondary, put it that way. It was a MAC championship, but it still had 15 interceptions last year. This is a championship-level secondary that Brian Lewerke will be facing on Saturday in East Lansing.
I agree. I mean, I got a chance to watch MSU's game on Saturday in pretty much its entirety, which is relatively rare just because I'm usually down in Ann Arbor for Michigan games, and obviously this one was in Dallas, so and they didn't play at the same time, so that was nice. I thought Michigan State looked improved. I'm still not sure how much improved. You know, obviously, you know, you're playing a lower tier MAC team, so it's hard to tell.
Well, they're an upper tier MAC team though.
No, not Western, Bowling Green.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's hard to tell how that's going to translate, but obviously this is going to be a step up. you know, I've been talking to a lot of Spartan friends this week, and, you know, I'll say, hey, you know, what do you think of this game this weekend? And I think sometimes they're taking it as me, you know, trying to rile them up or something, but Western is a good team. Yeah. I don't know why. I get that they're a directional school, so people like to look down on them, but Western is a good football team. They pushed USC last weekend. Anybody who tells you that game wasn't competitive did not watch it. Was it down to the last?
Western hung tough in that one.
Yeah. Was it down to the last minute? No. But you know what? USC fans were nervous. I'll tell you that much. Western, you know, they're a good team. They're going to come in. The spread, I think, is like 5 or 6 for this game. You know, Vegas anticipates a tight battle. And, you know, I think one thing that is a little different about Western versus, you know, some of these other teams that Michigan State's – and when I say some of these other teams, I'm referring to the bye non-conference games, you know, where you pay someone to come in to kick their butt.
Right.
Western has won a lot of games. They beat 2 Big Ten teams on the road last year. They are not going to be intimidated by Spartan Stadium. They're not going to be intimidated by playing in front of a big crowd. You know, maybe Michigan State will.
Western will have a good crowd there, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's going to be competitive. I think Michigan State is going to have to come out firing. I would say the one thing I would say as far as Michigan State is I think they match up relatively well against Western. You know, the passing game, as you mentioned, is going to be a challenge offensively, but Western could not pass the ball very well against USC. I think Michigan State's weakness on defense is the secondary. So, you know, maybe that plays into their hands a little bit. You know, Western can't take advantage of sort of that weakness. I think Michigan State, I'd lean them very slightly, but I think it's going to be a very tight game. I think it's going to be competitive, and it wouldn't shock me at all if Western pulled off the upset.
It wouldn't shock me at all either if that happened. I do think this is going to be, you know, probably like a 23-17 game. Mm-hmm. I see Michigan State winning. I don't see it being a high-scoring game. So I'll go 23-17 on that. But, you know, I agree. And I don't think anybody would be shocked if Western did win that game. But I expect Michigan State to win this game. And I think that it's an important game for a lot of reasons. And then you add fuel to the fire, 3-9, and then you lose to Western Michigan. Mm-hmm. I mean, this, for the psyche of Michigan State football, this is big. For the psyche of Brian Lewerke, this is a big game. So we want to know what you guys think, too, on the Michigan State games. I'm not going to give you any free food because I don't have anything going on with anybody in East Lansing. But if you just want bragging rights, tweet your score predictions again at myself, at AdamBiggers81. You can tweet them at the podcast, at MittenSportsMI. I want to urge everyone, subscribe to this YouTube channel, the two-man shows with Thomas and myself on the Sports in the Mitten channel on YouTube. Be sure to like and subscribe. And then my personal YouTube channel, which will have all the live streams of the player interviews and the solo podcast, go ahead and go like and subscribe to that too. So I do have one final note of the evening before we let everyone go, Thomas. And Jim Harbaugh tweeted out yesterday Michigan's Players of the Week. And if you listen to the post-game press conference or the Monday press conference, he talked a lot. Devin Bush was the defensive player of the game. He led Michigan 7 tackles. Offensive player of the game was Ty Isaac with his matched a career high 114 yards. Special teams player of the game. And this one, because we saw some guys get some action on special teams, but this one makes me happy because you know that he's working hard, and we heard a lot about him through camp. Nate Shanley, special teams player of the game, which I don't know why – Quinn Nordine doesn't really get that.
I was going to say, but.
Yeah, or maybe use Quinn's offensive player of the game, maybe. You know, to give it a tie with him and Ty Isaac. The offensive lineman of the game was Pat Kugler. Defensive lineman of the game was Chase Winovich. And the big hit of the week belonged to Chase Winovich. And that I believe that's probably the one where he and Mo Hurst nearly tore Felipe Franks in half. That one looked like it was going to be pretty bad for Felipe Franks. Malik Zaire didn't fare any better. 6 sacks. Michigan's defense all over it.
I will just,
again, like,
I just want to throw out that, you know, if you were like me, I honestly started laughing when they brought in Zaire. Personally, I am not high on Malik Zaire at all. I know some people that talked him up this offseason, but I never thought he was that good at Notre Dame. You know, we'll just start with the fact, if you're a fifth-year quarterback and you're transferring, there's probably something that your former school didn't like that much. And he had no chance. I mean, my gosh, did they just
– I thought Malik was going to go there and get the job. And if we got a couple questions real quick at the end. Wes Weber, and hey, Wes, thanks for those Florida stats. Wes broke down some the and I retweeted them. It's like 0.25 points per possession for Florida or something. It was just had to go down and break them down. But those numbers put the game in perspective. Wes says, FYI, I appreciate the player interviews you post watching today. It was eye-opening to think of DPJ's college schedule, and he's referencing Donovan Peoples-Jones pre-med. He was taking calculus. This kid is just tackling the hardest courses. He's very serious. I don't want to say that I think he's learning to interview. I mean, I think it's one time when you I think it's one thing when you get a lot of attention in high school, then you go to the college level. He's very calm, very well spoken. He doesn't really get too emotional. And if you watch the video again on my YouTube channel, I have that. Base 7769, do you think MSU will lose this week? And we just kind of went over that. I don't think they do, Base, but I think there's a chance for it. I wouldn't, like Thomas and I said, neither one of us would be surprised. So I want to thank everybody for watching the live stream here on the Sports in the Mitten YouTube channel. Please like and subscribe. Follow me on Twitter at AdamBiggers81. Follow the podcast on Twitter at Mitten Sports MI. Like us on Facebook, Sports in the Mitten. And don't forget to follow FanRag Sports at FanRag_U, FanRagSports.com. And Thomas is going to tell you where you can follow him and check out his college hoops coverage on SB Nation.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at TBendit and my Big Ten hoops coverage at BT Powerhouse. You know, we're still a little bit away from the season preview stuff tipping off, but in a month or two, it'll be here. So stay tuned.
Hey, we'll end it on this, actually. We'll really end. Michigan State preseason number one, you buying it or not?
I personally would probably put Duke there, but they're certainly in the discussion. I would be shocked if they weren't top five at least.
Yeah, I think I don't know about preseason number one. We've seen preseason number one with Michigan State a few times. Top five, no doubt about it. And a final note, Michigan State is actually the final note. And real quick, you know, we didn't do a show. Rest in peace, Judd Heathcote, college coaching legend, Tom Izzo's mentor. He built Michigan State basketball. He put the foundation there. Tom, years later, when he took over, Tom was an assistant there in 83. Judd hired him. 95, Tom takes over the program from Judd. And look at the levels that he had taken it to. Judd Heathcote's famous for saying, you know, yeah, they got to the Final Four. They won a national championship. They didn't do anything after that. He thought that they'd be back there 3-4 times. So Tom with the one national title, but 7 Final Fours, to get to the Final Four 7 times just speaks volumes in itself. And, you know, Judd Heathcote, I never had the opportunity to interview Judd Heathcote. I read some stuff from Rex Rhodes and Graham Couch and those guys who had been around him. And, you know, I've seen a lot of videos. And the Michigan State is going to be wearing a commemorative patch to honor Judd's legacy and, you know, just his life. And a huge part of Michigan State basketball, a huge part of the university itself. When you go and look at, when we talk about just staying in state here, look at all the great coaches just at Michigan and Michigan State alone. And not just locally great, we're talking well-respected guys across the country. You know, Judd Heathcote and Tom Izzo. I mean, a basketball program's lucky to have one of those guys, right, as a head coach, let alone two. So, you know, thoughts and prayers to the Heathcote family. It was unfortunate news, you know, and I heard about it, you know, in such an impersonal way in my inbox. And press release, Judd Heathcote passes away at 90. So that's, I have to believe that that's going to spark some emotion for Tom Izzo. Tom Izzo also lost his father. I mean, Tom Izzo is the kind of guy that can turn something, a negative, into a positive. And I think that Judd's passing is really going to be something that motivates him this year. I think it's going to, maybe not so much the players, but they're going to feel it through Tom Izzo, because if you don't understand the connection that Tom Izzo and Judd Heathcote had, then I guess you don't understand it. I'll liken it to this, the Jim Harbaugh Bo connection. Mm-hmm. Very similar. Jim Harbaugh, I think in the back of his mind is I don't want to say chasing Bo, but he's trying to make Bo proud.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the same time, that the same could be said for Tom Izzo. And, you know, Tom wasn't Judd's player, but, you know, play along with me here. I think it's a similar relationship. So anyway, I'm Adam. He's Thomas. Thanks for watching. We appreciate it. I'll have a solo podcast this week, probably Friday morning, maybe do one tomorrow. We'll do it in our typical mailbag fashion. And, again, check out Thomas's work on BT Powerhouse, SB Nation blog. He does a fantastic job covering Big Ten hoops. So thanks for joining us, guys. We'll talk to you next time.